symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Everybody, and welcome to a special episode of A Work in Progress. We are going to review WrestleMania 8 today, and I would never ever do one of these shows by myself. So with me, as always, he is the Ballroom Brawling Disco Dancing Dynamite Stretching Intercontinental Playboy. Folks, he's over, but he's not quite as over as WrestleMania at GRWrestling.Glenn Abbott. Glenn, how are you?
I'm doing very well. This is a great crossover show as well.
It is a wonderful crossover show because not only have I got Glenn here with me, we got a special guest. He's been on here before. I've been on his show before. He's a lovely person. Bump on the Twitter gimmick if you're still on there. He's Kyle. Kyle, how the fuck are you?
Well, I'm almost not on there anymore either. But yeah, it's great to be here. Appreciate you having me on again. I think last time we talked like a Killer Bees match or some stupid shit.
I think it was. And you were on the, you did the AWI Pod Rumble with us last year too, I believe.
Yes. That was a good time. That was a good old time. And this was a good old time too.
But after we do this WrestleMania review, we're going to watch a couple of bad WrestleMania matches too.
Excellent.
So that's yearly tradition.
Yes, it's our yearly tradition. We can't flake out on our yearly tradition, Kyle, can we?
I guess not. We'll never run out of bad WrestleMania matches.
No, because there's a plethora of all of them. And if I do run out of them, I'll just start over.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking people won't remember. But anyway, I thought it would be fun to get Kyle on here to review WrestleMania 8 with us. It's one of my favorite WrestleManias. I know it's one of Glenn's favorite WrestleManias. Kyle, you've never seen this one until you watched it recently, correct?
No. I've seen WrestleMania 10 and on, so I've never seen WrestleMania 8 before, and I watched it in its entirety this morning, and it was a dandy little show, I would say, overall.
I would agree. A dandy little show is a pretty good way to describe it.
Yeah, you see Sid and Hogan on the poster, and it's like, it's probably shit, but, I mean, that was shit. But everything else is pretty cool. Most everything else is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's got some bad 90s wrestling matches for sure, but it's also got some classic 90s wrestling matches. People always look at it as like it was a downfall because they didn't have Hogan versus Flair like they were going to. And maybe that's true because they probably would have made a lot more money probably if it was Flair versus Hogan. But I think as far as like the match quality and everything, the way it's laid out, I think it's one of the top five. It's one of my top five favorite WrestleManias of all time. And I think a lot of people get a bit of a bad rap because it didn't have that main event. And even if you've never watched it before, I think people think, oh, WrestleMania 8 sucks, but that's just not the case. Yeah. In my humble opinion.
Like I said, that's why I assumed it was not a good WrestleMania, but then I looked at the card and it's like, oh, Flair and Savage and Bret and Piper. It's like, damn. Even like some of like the lesser matches, like the job, like not jobber matches, but like the in-between matches were like solid. So yeah, like I said, it was just a fun, it was an easy watch for sure.
Definitely.
And you have Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan on commentary at the top of their game.
Whew. I don't think I've actually watched a full show with them on commentary before, now that I'm thinking about it. If I have, it's been like very few. So that was a treat.
Those two back and forth with, you know, Heenan, you know, being fully on the side of Flair and just the way Gorilla would just jab him.
Yeah,
throw jabs at him just to make him even madder, and the way Bobby sold it was just so good. They're probably the best, my favorite commentary team of all time. I always like Jesse and Gorilla too, but you can't beat Bobby and Gorilla.
No, people go on about again. It's those rose tinted glasses for the Attitude Era about going on about Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, but I don't think you can beat Bobby Heenan and Gorilla Monsoon.
Yeah. Jerry Lawler did a lot of puppies, the puppies. So
it fit the time though, because that was my time growing up in wrestling was JR and King, and I mean it's just it fit the ridiculousness that was going on in on the screen, the commentary.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do that 97 review show, and it's kind of like the same thing. You get the King making, you know, obscene jokes that he's been making for 20 years and still makes 20 years after that.
Yeah, jeez.
Until he goes round and round. But anyway, let's get into this. It's WrestleMania 8. It took place on April 5th, 1992 from the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, Indiana. It had 62,167 folks there. Reba McEntire sung the Star Spangled Banner. Glenn, I know you used to be a DJ. Did you ever spin any Reba McEntire records?
No, not really. You mean El Matador's sister?
Yes, El Matador's sister, because she is Reba McEntire.
Reba McEntire.
That was one of Bobby Heenan's comments as El Matador came out to the ring. Very good. Unfortunately for you, Glenn, your buddy, the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, did not get to be on the card. He was supposed to take on the Berserker, but it did not take place due to time constraints. And I'm very sad to report this is a match we didn't get to see because it was a dark match. It was the Bushwhackers versus the Beverly Brothers.
Yeah, I was sad. I was sad about that. A little thing between you and I and the gatepost, that wasn't the only reason that that match was pulled. It wasn't just time constraints.
Oh, so there was other things going on, the reason why they couldn't wrestle that night.
Like the same reason that I get a phone call.
Oh.
Saying, where the fuck is he?
I'm picking you up. I'm picking up what you're laying down here. And that could be either guy, the Bulldog or the Berserker.
Yeah.
They both have their problems. are you familiar with the Beverly Brothers, Kyle?
So I've seen SummerSlam 92. Okay. I think that's the extent of Bo and Blake that I'm familiar with.
Yeah, one of their sons is Von Wagner. I can't remember which one, but one of their sons is Von Wagner.
Yeah.
I think they're a low-key and underrated tag team. I always liked their work. They looked a little stiff out there, but that's okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, nothing wrong with a little stiffness at all, I fuck say. This was the one and only wrestling show to take place at the Hoosier Dome. They had a house show on February 16th, 1985. The only two matches that I could find listed were Roddy Piper versus the Drunkyard Dog, and Andre the Giant teamed with Mad Dog Vachon to take on Big John Studd and Ken Patera. That's an odd tag team combination. Andre the Giant, Mad Dog Vachon.
How tall is Mad Dog? I feel like he's like 4 feet tall.
Yeah, he looks really short. And compared to Andre, he probably looks like a fucking little person.
That's what I was like picturing it in my head. It's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I mean, probably one of the most feared tag teams of all time, though, because Mad Dog was a fucking crazy person.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to confront either of those gentlemen.
No, I wouldn't fight them now and they're dead. the buy rate for this WrestleMania was a 2.3, which adds up to about 920,000 buys, which at the time was the worst buy rate for a WrestleMania in WrestleMania history. WrestleMania 7 did a 2.8, and WrestleMania 6 did a 3.8. And this was the first WrestleMania held in a football stadium since WrestleMania 3, and it would be the last until WrestleMania 17 at the Astrodome. I mean, people don't think about that if you're a New Age wrestling fan, but they used to just do it in fucking arenas. They didn't get it. You can get it in football stadiums.
No, that's probably because according to the WWE, but they also gave out more than 15,000 free tickets. So they were trying to fill a stadium and it weren't happening.
Makes sense why they decided to go to Las Vegas for WrestleMania then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indiana's kind of feels like a random destination for WrestleMania. It doesn't seem like a really like a vacation hotspot, you know?
Yeah, nobody's like, let's go to Indiana. Nobody says that.
What is in Indiana other than the Hoosiers?
The Colts, maybe?
Just the sports teams.
The Indiana Pacers. Yeah, I don't know. Indianapolis is the big city in Indiana, and I don't like.
What's their cuisine? What's the Indiana cuisine?
Goddamn, pal, that is a good question. I should have looked that up.
Call in if you know.
It's probably corn, just like it is in Nebraska.
Yeah, I think everything in between, Virginia and California, is corn.
It's corn. exactly. Yeah, if you're an Indiana fan, let us know what you guys like to fucking eat, you losers. I'm not throwing any shade. I live in Nebraska, okay? It sucks here too.
Well, there goes your well-known Indiana following podcast. Yeah,
they're gone. Oh, well. No big deal.
Fuck them.
That's okay. Fuck you, Indiana. There, I said it. The first match of the evening is the Matador taking on Shawn Michaels. A very gentlemanly Tito Santana leads his sister Reba McIntyre out of the ring, which is really nice of him. Mm-hmm. Shawn Michaels had just recently turned heel and adopted Sherry as his manager. Kyle, go ahead and tell me what you think of the open match here.
Oh, it was good. I mean, it was interesting seeing a very fresh HBK here with Sherry and the Sherry music, like the different music. How fresh are we off of the Rockers breaking up?
So it would have been like November or December of 91. So pretty
just a few months. Yeah.
Yeah. Just a few months.
And you can kind of tell he's like still figuring out the gimmick a little bit, but the match was good. I mean, him and Tito Santana. How can you go wrong? Even though Tito's at the end here, but love the selling. The selling from Shawn is really what stood out for me. Like he took like an atomic drop and did a 360 spin, which is just sensational.
Yeah.
Sherry. And also Gorilla Monsoon, by the way, suggests that Helen Keller did Sherry's makeup, which I thought was a bit rude.
Yeah. They were on Sherry the whole time, the pair of them.
They worked, man. Deshaun just throwing her on the ground and her liking it. Man, where do I find one of those, huh?
Yeah, no kidding, right, pal? Women these days. I am just kidding.
They get mad when you grab their hair and throw them face throw first them into the mat.
Yeah. You tell them, go stand over there and don't move until I tell you. They get all angry. I don't understand. Right.
Put a heart on your face. Yeah, put my name on your forehead. They don't like it anymore.
The first ever wrestling DVD I bought, and this is sad because the first ever wrestling DVD I bought, I was an adult. I was in my 20s. And I bought a ladder match DVD. And the first match on there was a Shawn Michaels Bret Hart ladder match. And I remember Gorilla Monsoon being like, oh my God, that sensational Sherry, she's got a tattoo right on her breast. And Lord Alfred Hayes being like, oh Lord, I don't want to hear about that. And Gorilla Monsoon being like, wait till they show you, I'll show you.
Man, they would have a seizure watching today's wrestling.
Yeah.
They would be out. If they saw what I saw on NXT this week, they would have fell over. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
100%. What about you, Glenn? What do you think about this one?
I think it was a good, decent little match. El Matador held his own nicely. As Kyle said, Shawn's just finding his feet, really, as the singles. But you're seeing the super kicks come in and the other little bits and pieces. And
oh, yeah. He doesn't have the switching music yet, huh?
No, and his timing is so good. If he takes, as you said, with the atomic drops, first thing he did was then roll out the ring. He ain't going to give anybody the chance to...
Yeah, he did that too. When Tito hit the flying forearm, he immediately rolled right out of the ring, which I thought was pretty good.
The flying burrito? Was it the flying burrito or the flying jalapeno?
Flying jalapeno. That's what Bobby called it.
Yeah, right. but Jesse Ventura did used to call it the flying burrito too, so... They used to say very racist things back then. Yeah, so eventually Shawn Michaels does get the win. Tito tries to give Shawn a body slam from the apron back into the ring, but Shawn is able to grab the top rope and lands on top of Tito, and he's able to hold him down for the three count and the win. Tito Santana, I've probably said this before, the only wrestler besides Hulk Hogan to be on the first 8 WrestleManias, and this would be his last WrestleMania.
Yeah, match, I was going to say.
Wow.
I was just about to say his career spirals downward after that.
I was about to say, like, at what point did he become El Matador?
I try to forget about it. I don't know.
Because I didn't even know. I saw El Matador on the card. I was like, oh, some stupid jobber is going to come out here and face Shawn Michaels. But Tito Santana is like, wow. But, I mean, it didn't really hinder him, I guess, the gimmick, you know?
Yeah, that was got to be one of the worst ideas ever. Like, you got this guy who's an established character. People know his name. He's a great wrestler, was an Intercontinental Champion, Tag Team Champion, and we're going to make him a bullfighter.
Because he's Mexican or whatever.
That's Vince at this time, isn't it? You try to turn everybody into not wrestling jobbers, but proper jobbers. have a job rather than just...
Right.
Yeah. Because this guy not only wrestles men, he wrestles bulls too. He's a tough son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Where's El Torito here?
I think he was a kid probably at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Still the same height though.
I was about to say, you could find him and put some horns on some little person.
Yeah, I mean, fuck, if you're going to make him a bullfighter, at least give him a fucking bull to fight with, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't it like the colognes that were
bullfighters? That was one thing that was missing from this WrestleMania. A little people's match.
Oh, little people's match. Yeah, you're right. I would have loved it. I love little people wrestling. It's my favorite.
They still have it. They still just call it midget wrestling, by the way. At least here they do. It's like, yeah, go to the bar, see some midgets wrestle. It's like, I should go. Yeah. I don't know why I haven't been.
They call themselves midgets. So I don't know why it's suddenly gone all PC not to call them midgets when people call themselves midgets.
Yeah. I'm going to make AWI pod shirts. We're going to call them midgets again. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Right. And they're not real people anyways, so like, who cares, right?
Yeah, they're holograms, really. They're like birds. They're not real.
Exactly.
Well, we know what one of them is anyway.
A hologram?
Oh, no, Andre the Giant's appendage, apparently. From.
Oh, yeah, Max. Yeah, we talked about how Max Mini was Andre the Giant's penis. Yeah.
I can get behind that. I can spread that.
All the way, pal. Mean Gene then brings out LOD for an interview. Mean Gene calls them strange-looking people, which I thought was funny. They got Paul Ellering with them, who is still on SmackDown some weeks, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, I don't think he ever talks anymore, though. So I don't even know what his purpose is anymore, but that's whatever.
He makes no sense. It's like, oh, here's this badass guy, these other two badass dudes, this hot chick, and here's their grandpa.
It's like they have other mouthpieces within the faction. So it's like, what does he... I guess he provides, like, the... I don't know.
Yeah.
Even back at this point, LOD were doing their own promos. They didn't need Ellery for anything.
I don't know. What do you think of their the Legion of Doom and their promo abilities?
Hilarious.
Oh yeah, I mean they're ridiculous, but at the same time they're also guys. One guy's got like a reverse mohawk, and one guy's got a mohawk, and they got face paint on, so they're not supposed to make sense. You know what I mean?
Right. You can't just look like that and speak eloquently, right? So yeah, you're right.
It wouldn't make any sense. I want you to sound like a roided out freak, because that's what you are.
Hi, Captain.
Yeah, they got Ellering with him. I thought Ellering's promo here was pretty good. I thought. I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, I thought the whole thing was pretty good. Actually, even the loud yelling, like, I thought it worked. I thought this all worked.
Yeah, but I mean, the fans were into it too. I mean, everybody popped when they came out. They got the Road Warrior pop, and I think people were actually genuinely excited to see Ellering with them, because, I mean, you just associate Paul Ellering with those guys, and I don't think he had been in the WWF with them at that point. Yeah, so I don't know. I thought it was a really good promo. It was a fun way to get the crowd jacked up. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so good way to get the crowd going. And then we get into another promo, and this is from Jake the Snake Roberts and
Sean Mooney here.
Yeah, and also Sean Mooney. We love Sean Mooney and his eyebrows on this show. He's one of our favorites.
And his eyebrows. I didn't get a good look at his eyebrows.
Though they're magical, pal.
I need to go relook at the tape.
Yeah, I mean, so Jake and The Undertaker were kind of friends, and they were like feuding with Macho Man and Sid. And then, I don't know, I guess The Undertaker decided he didn't want to be a bad guy anymore, and then they started feuding with each other. This is a really good promo by Jake, especially the part when he's talking about, like, you know, I will hook the DDT and drive his head through the mat. And I thought it was really good. And I also thought it was interesting that Jake did such a good promo, because he was really on his way out of the WWE. This would be his last match in the WWF for like 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. He even threatened to no-show if they didn't give him his grant him release from his contract. He said he wouldn't come to the show if he wasn't granted his release. So I was surprised that he was into it as much as he was. But I thought it was a great promo. Have you seen a lot of promos from Jake Roberts, Kyle?
A few of them. Yeah, I think he's one of the best of all time, honestly, especially like we're just coming off of that Road Warriors promo. And like that was everybody, like the Nasty Boys. Like there's a promo like for the 8-man tag. Everybody's just fucking yelling. You have Jake Roberts, who has like actual substance to what he's saying. And by the way, Jake Roberts, underrated handsome man. I'll say this. He's a good looking fella here.
I can't argue with that. No, he's a good looking guy.
Yeah. Just had to throw that out there.
Absolutely, pal. Yeah. So interesting match. The Undertaker is a babyface to this point, which is crazy to think. In 1990, he struck fear into my 6-year-old heart. But when I was 8 years old, I loved him, which is strange. Glenn, what do you think about this one with one of your favorite characters ever?
This was a great match. I love this match. Jake done his part perfectly in this. And he said in his promo beforehand, he wasn't going to bring his snake to the ring. He was true to his word, and there was no shenanigans, which was nice.
Yeah, not too much shenanigans. Yeah, I thought it was a really good match, too. I mean, it wasn't, like, super long, and there wasn't a lot of high spots or anything, but I think, like, the psychology of it and the way they worked the match, especially with The Undertaker at this point, at this time, because I think he's a little bit more limited in the ring with his slow proddingness that they want him to stick to. They talk about him always smelling of formaldehyde, which I thought was funny. What about you, Kyle? How about you? What did you think about this one?
Yeah, it was good. It was. I don't think it needed to be too much longer than it was. It was cool seeing Undertaker in this like early iteration, how he's like kind of impenetrable still. Like he's kind of just like a. He has that monster mystique about him, but he turns it on in bursts of speed, and even like when he gets clotheslined over the top rope, and he backflips and lands on his feet. Like these little like glimpses of athleticism make him stand out. So. And then the DDT, still a finisher at this point. Love to see that. And but could not take the Taker down. Could not make him rest in peace, if you know what I'm saying.
Staying up.
Yeah, we just kept. Well, he shouldn't have started beating on Paul Bearer, because that was his downfall. He hit the DDT, but then he got out of the ring and started beating on Paul Bearer. And the Undertaker wouldn't stand for that.
Once you're after the urn.
Yeah.
Especially knowing that he was buggering off to WCW. The Undertaker weren't going to let him take the urn there.
That would have been a hell of a gimmick.
That was his motivation. He didn't want him to go to Atlanta. I like that layer to the story.
Bobby Heenan was like, "What's in there? A loved one? I hated one?" maybe it's Undertaker's old dog. We don't know.
It could be. That could be.
I'd carry my dog's ashes around if I was weird. So, yeah, Taker goes out there to get Jake off of Paul Bearer. He hits a tombstone on the outside of the ring, which you can clearly see that Jake's head was nowhere near the ground, which I'm not complaining. No. But he wasn't like Hulk Hogan, though, and tried to say that he broke his neck and, you know, like Hulk Hogan did.
Right. Classic.
But, yeah, Undertaker rolls him back in the ring, pins him. He is now 2-0 at WrestleMania. I wonder if he's going to do anything else at WrestleMania. I wonder where his career is going to go from here.
Don't know. I mean, if Jake would have just pinned him after the DDT, we would have just kiboshed that whole streak thing, and who knows what would have happened.
Yeah. Who knows what would have happened with Undertaker's career at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. It is weird, like, watching this, like if you were watching at the time, did you, like, know this guy was going to be a star? Because it's like, or is it just, like, another silly gimmick that might last a year or two?
It's better to ask Glenn, because I was so young that I couldn't.
Soon as I saw him at Survivor Series, I thought, this guy has got something. I didn't even equate the fact that he was me, Mark Callis.
Right.
WCW.
Booger Red. Or what was it? Yeah. Texas Red?
Yeah. What great creative geniuses they were in WCW. Say, look at this guy. Let's call him Mean Mark.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Not gonna lie, it's a pretty cool name.
Vince goes, "Oh, look at this guy. Oh, I'll make him an Undertaker."
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you like sit back and like think about what the gimmick is, it's kind of a stupid gimmick. What, he's a zombie, he wears a fedora, he has a rotund fella next to him with makeup. Like, it's very silly, but it worked for whatever reason.
It wasn't even the rotund. Well, it was.
Yeah.
But it wasn't Paul Bearer to start with.
Yeah, it's true.
Brother Love. When he first walked through the curtain, I was 5-6 years old and literally struck fear into my heart. My cousins would fuck with people. Everybody would sleep over at grandma's house. The first person to fall asleep would get the Undertaker, their hands crossed in the Undertaker. It would happen every single time.
That's so good.
And I remember when he beat Hulk Hogan, because, of course, I was the biggest Hulkamaniac, and my cousins and my older brother just fucking tormenting me forever that the Undertaker beat.
Oh, damn.
So then we get into what is probably my favorite match on the show. And they do a really cool promo segment between Bret Hart and Roddy Piper, where, you know, Piper's talking about how, you know, I love your family. And, you know, I remember how your mom used to make the bologna sandwiches, but she'd only put one piece of bologna on there. And, you know, and then we all learn how to tie our shoes. Of course, you tied your shoes together, but that's okay. It doesn't matter. And then, you know, Bret Hart gets mad at him a little bit. And then,
when he was a kid, he wasn't even potty trained.
Yeah.
He was seven when he became potty trained, I believe is what he said.
Yeah, everybody's got their problems, though, he said.
Yeah, you know, it's hard sometimes.
Yeah, and so, like, Bret, like, you know, they go back and forth, and then Bret's like, I could have had you, and Roddy's like, no, you didn't. And my favorite part of this whole promo is when Roddy takes the belt off and he's holding it, and he goes, she be mine! I don't know why, but that's my favorite part.
It's a maniac.
I love it. She be mine. So, yeah, Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper. It is for the Intercontinental Championship. Wow. Kyle, I'll let you go first. What do you think about this classic match?
Well, I mean, I like my Roddy Piper knowledge, at least in his prime, is pretty limited. I've actually just watched the WCW show where he debuted in 96, which kind of soured me on Roddy Piper. So it was a pleasure to see him here. And, I mean, it's the best match I've ever seen him in. Against Bret Hart. It's Bret Hart, so of course. But no, I liked the match just because, like, it maintained that, like, Roddy Piper shit talking kind of thing, but it was still ultimately like a wrestling match. Like, it was two guys trying to out wrestle each other. So, but I think the styles clashed in a good way. So, but yeah, it's my favorite Piper match that I've seen for sure.
It's definitely pretty good. What about you, Glenn? Go ahead. I could gush forever, so I'll let you guys talk first.
considering it officially was a face versus face match, and I love the fact that Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan worked up this fact that how important it was, how the Intercontinental Championship was so important to each man and why it was important, and actually gave them a reason. Without there being a story or anything behind it as why they were fighting, it gave them a reason to fight.
Right.
Yeah, I feel like we're in, like, peak Intercontinental Championship because we have the SummerSlam match at Wembley later this year, right?
Yeah.
Bret and, Bulldog.
This is when the Intercontinental Championship still mattered. I mean, it matters in today's wrestling, but there was a great deal of time where it didn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. No, it was... Yeah, that's all it needs to be. So it's the workman's title, and these guys worked for the title. What can you ask for?
Yeah, and the thing, like Glenn said too, is essentially a face versus face match, but Piper was doing stuff and enough stuff to kind of turn himself heel, so you kind of got Bret to be the baby.
I like how he, at one point, told Bret that his shoe was untied, and then Bret went to tie it, and then Piper just fucking cheap-shotted him. Like, stuff like that throughout the match was awesome.
Yeah, he just, I like how he like balled up his fist, stepped to the side, and clocked him right in the face. I thought that was really great, too. I think that was also because, like, there was a point, too, where Bret's kind of faking the shoulder injury, and then he tries to roll Piper up, and he almost gets him. So I think that kind of pissed Piper off. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why he started doing some of the underhanded shit. Bret starts bleeding in this match, which was a big no-no on WWF TV in 1992 match. I mean, I love the pacing of the match. I talk about pacing in matches all the time. I love matches that start slow and build, and this one did. And it had, like, a story within a story in the match with, you know, Piper goes out to get the ring bell after a ref bump, and he's going to hit Bret with it. He wants to hit Bret with it, but he just can't bring himself to do it, so he throws it down. And then I love the finish where he's got Bret in the sleeper hold, and Bret kicks himself off the top rope, flips over, pins him 1-2-3, a master class in psychology and storytelling during, but you could probably say that about every Bret Hart match, but I love this match. It's so great. I can go back and watch it any day, probably 10 days in a row. And every single time I'm going to go, wow, because I love it so much.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, I think the overall thing was, like, it just shows how Bret was the better wrestler here, because in the beginning, like, Bret's out wrestling him, and Roddy doesn't really get the advantage until he starts throwing out the strikes and busts him open and stuff like that, and then ultimately gets out-wrestled to lose. So, yeah, to your point, great psychology throughout this whole thing.
Yeah. And if you think that Piper had gone the whole match trying to make himself the heel, you know, even raking the injured forehead of
yep.
Bret. And then at the end, he just can't. You think he's going to nick the belt or hit Bret with the belt, and he doesn't. He just hands it to him.
Yeah.
And we all go off all happy and smiley.
Yeah, great, great stuff. And absolutely, if you've never seen that match, go watch it. I mean, it's WrestleMania week. Start your WrestleMania week off by watching this one because it's a classic. I love it.
For sure.
After that greatness, unfortunately, Bobby Heenan introduced us to the newest member of the World Body Federation, and it's the one and only baked potato faced Lex Luger, ladies and gentlemen.
How dare you? He's thick. He's looking thick. He's juicy at this point.
Very. He's juicier than Nikita Lyons at this point. And that's juicy, pal. Yeah, I don't know. They talk about, you know, he says about Bobby Heenan's doing great on commentary. I don't know about that fat guy next to you, though, which is probably the most entertaining thing that Lex Luger has ever said.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like a pretty good, honestly, like a good, it was a silly premise. But I thought Luger's like promo was solid. It got over his character, the total package, the World Bodybuilding Federation. Like it worked for what it was going. It was like what it was trying to accomplish, but it felt out of place on a WrestleMania card.
Yeah,
that was Vince trying to plug the WB.
Glenn, you mean you weren't a big fan of the World Body Federation?
No.
Wow, Glenn, I can't believe it. I'm shocked.
That should make a comeback. If the XFL can make a comeback, I think the WBF can make a comeback.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was just, I don't know, it's strange. And I don't like Lex Luger. I hate his face. So anytime I see him, I just go, fuck this guy.
What was up with Lex drinking it was like a goblet of some white substance towards the end?
Yeah, it looked like milk or something.
Yeah, I'm pretty milk. Sure.
I could pro or something.
Yeah, it was definitely I could pro. God. Which that was a thing back in the 90s. They would tell you milk, it's so good for your body, and now they're like, don't drink milk, it'll tear up your insides. What are you doing?
Yeah,
don't drink all that milk, you're either gonna grow tits or never shit. Don't do that. We then hear from all 8 men that are participating in the tag team match, and because it's so much fun, I think we need to watch this and listen to it because it's
oh god, yeah.
This is great. Virgil, Duggan, Bossman, Slaughter. This is going to be the biggest repossession in any WrestleMania.
And the white, you losers. Yeah, that's right. The Nasty Boys are going to anesthetize you. The Mounties going to electrify you. And the Repo Man, he's towing away the carcasses.
Judgment Day's in hand. Eat your last meal. Say goodbye to all your friends because you're about to serve nothing but hard time.
Yeah. Repo Man, Mountie. The Nasty Boys. My nose will be protected. But who in the world is going to protect your nose?
Yeah, folks. At this WrestleMania, you see some great wrestling. But if you want to see a fight, if you want to see a rumble, you watch that 8-man tag. There's not going to be no takedowns. There's not going to be no go-behinds. It's going to be a fight. And I'll let you in on our strategy. Attack, attack, attack.
Kyle, can you confirm or deny that your favorite wrestling move is the go behind?
It's definitely a favorite move in my everyday repertoire. That's for sure. I try to lock it in whenever I get a chance.
Goddamn right, pal. Anytime the missus is doing the dishes, bam.
Here comes the go behind. Here it
comes. I'm going to scream that today. Here comes the go behind. She's going to be so confused.
And I do it in a Jim Duggan voice as well.
Yeah, oh! Yeah, of course.
Start with a hoe.
Yeah, so that was fun. Yeah, it all starts with a hoe. Yeah. I know you didn't mean it like that, but it all worked out. So we also get Ray Gomes from the show Family Feud. I'm sure we've all heard of Family Feud, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're called Family Fortunes over here, but I know this.
I was going to ask you. You said Family Fortunes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Does Ricky Gervais host that?
No. Thank God.
Him and Idris Elba are the only two British actors I can name you off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Daniel That's because they were on The Office, pal. That's the only reason why I know.
Yeah, there you go.
Wasn't his name David Brent? Wasn't his name on The Office in the
British version? Yeah.
Brent's a good name. Good, solid name. So he says that he did a survey with some of the fans here. And 100 people in the audience he surveyed, and they said the Mountie is a man who doesn't know the meaning of the word fear, but that's because he doesn't know the meaning of most words. He then goes on to say that the Repo Man, he said that no one can call him Two-Face because he'd be wearing the other one right now. These are good 90s jokes. He then said the Nasty Boys, he says they're two men sharing one brain. And then he says, if you could sum up the Nasty Boys' success in the WWF in one word, it would be lucky. And then they chase him out of the ring.
He would be better off saying the Nasty Boys are two men sharing one sink.
That's right, because they're pissing in your sinks. I saw when they were doing a promo, there was like a door behind them and it said steam room. I said, oh God, they pissed all in that steam room.
Yeah.
That checks out. That seems right up their alley.
Yeah. Smells like urine in there.
Petty city.
So it's the Nasty Boys, the Mountie, and the Repo Man taking on hashtag get the breadsticks ready, hashtag RIP, hashtag love the fucking Olive Garden, Virgil, hashtag fuck money. I forgot that one. Hacksaw Jim Duggan, ho! The recently turned, I guess, non-Iraqi sympathizer. He's back to American side.
It was just a face.
And the big boss man. First, I need to point out that the greatest referee of all time refereed this match, Dangerous Danny Davis. First and foremost, we got to get that out of the way.
I'll take.
Whole lot of clotheslines in this match. Glenn?
My big note from this was, who was that masked man?
Oh. He got his nose broke by Sid, if you remember, Glenn.
I do remember, yes.
Oh, is that a shoot broke nose, or is he fooling?
I think he was a shoot broke nose.
Against Sid, yeah, probably that checks out as well. Yeah,
so I don't remember what episode, but on the Life and Times of Psycho Sid, which is a show we do that you can watch on YouTube, I'm pretty sure we saw the match where he, or I don't think it was a match. I think he beat up somebody else, and then Virgil came down to save them, and then he beat him up and broke his nose.
he smashed him into the mat.
And Virgil said, fuck, I should have just took my hashtag fuck money and went to fucking Olive Garden and got some breadsticks.
Damn
it. I don't know. Standard tag team match just to get everyone on the WrestleMania card. Do you have any notes from this one, Kyle?
I'll just say the psychology that we saw in the previous match was absent from this one. But like you said, it's just we got eight guys. We want to get on the card. Let's throw them out here. It was kind of a mess. I thought the Ray Combs roast at the beginning was probably the best part of this. But it was a match that happened. That's for sure. I think Boss Man for me stood out. He was just moving really well here, I thought. But otherwise, it was just a lot of guys running into each other until a bell rang.
One thing I didn't know about the Boss Man, he wasn't overweight.
No, our friends over at DDT Wrestling, they used to give out an award called the Big Boss. What was it called, Glenn? Yeah, the Red Trailer Award?
No, the Boss Man Wettest Wrestler Award.
Yeah, because he's always so. If you like, he'll be out there just cutting a promo, and he'll have sweat past his nipples. I'm like, dog, how did you get so sweaty? Looks like he just got out of a pool.
He's wearing a lot of stuff, a lot of layers. He probably got a bulletproof vest under that shirt. You know,
that's a good point. He is the big boss man. Like Kyle said, it's just your standard eight man 90s wrestling match, basically. The Nasty Boys take off Virgil's mask. They try to hit him with it, but he ducks. So Sags hits Knobs. Virgil pins him, and the babyface team wins. Sorry, Glenn, did you have any any mat wrestling that you liked in this one?
Definitely not. Well, you just said there sums up my notes exactly, so we'll just move on.
Yeah. Then we get into another very, very good match. It is Ric Flair defending the WWF Championship against Randy Macho Man Savage. The whole story of this is like Flair trying to say that he was with Liz before Randy. He even doctored some photos to make it seem like they were sitting by the pool together, or that she was like feeding him grapes or some shit. I don't exactly remember. And then Perfect and Flair are saying they got these pictures of her. They don't say what these pictures say, but they're highly like making it seem like it's going to be something nefarious. You know what I'm saying? They're making it seem like we're going to see Miss Elizabeth's tits tonight. Which I don't feel comfortable even saying that. I wish I hadn't said it. I wish I could say that. that's the whole thing. So not only does Macho Man want the championship, but he also wants revenge. Yeah, Glenn, tell me about this one, because I love this match too. This is also one of my favorite WrestleMania matches.
This is excellent, because you've got Bobby the Brain. He's on this, clearly on the side of Mr. Perfect and Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Where's me all my notes on this? Somebody else talk about it while I dig my notes out.
Go ahead, Kyle.
I'll try to fiddle through my notes. Yeah, it was a great match. I mean, this and the IC title match were definitely the top two for me. Just different matches. Like, this one had a lot more shenanigans and interference and brass knuckles, I think, or white knuckles, whatever they were.
Something.
So it was, I mean, it feels like Flair and Macho Man, because I'm, you know, watching 96 WCW. And it feels like they face each other every goddamn week. So, but this one definitely stood above any other match between these two that I've seen, at least. Macho Man is red hot. Flair, it's just seeing Flair in this era in the WWF just feels weird. It feels like he was always a WCW guy, but it was classic stuff. There was like a, I was surprised there was not a lot of like leg work from Ric Flair in the beginning, at least, because it feels like that's what every match is with Ric Flair, but I guess he pulled it out towards the end. But no, the stuff with Liz coming out, you know, towards the end and Perfect being there, it was a little, it got a little overwhelming at some points, but I think it all, you know, it all added to the match ultimately. And it was a cool moment towards the end, but yeah, it was a hot match. I really enjoyed it.
It was one gnarly bump that Macho Man took, where he rushed at Flair and Flair flipped him over the top rope, and he took a hard back bump to the floor.
It went straight back. Yeah. He didn't do like the side land on my feet deal. He just flipped forward and landed.
And the elevation on that too. Like, he, it wasn't no little throw over the tower. He fucking threw him over the top rope. Yeah, there was another point too where Savage kind of flings Flair over the rope, but backwards, and Flair kind of like flips out. And I thought that was a really cool spot too. I mean, these two wrestling each other can never go bad unless, of course, you have to watch it every week like Kyle has to. And I remember WCW 1996, and they did wrestle a lot. And there was a lot of high heels involved. I just remember everyone getting hit with high heels. And
That's when Liz was on the side of Flair at that point. So it was a lot. She took the alimony from Savage, and it was the whole thing.
Yeah. Even though by that point they had been divorced for 4 or 5 years.
We don't talk about that.
That doesn't matter.
But then Liz comes back for Macho and the NWO comes around. Oh, it's a whole. She's just getting pulled back and forth and to and fro.
She doesn't know what to do. You got anything else, Glenn?
Just the usual ending, Macho Man, Elizabeth ending. Elizabeth distracting the officials. And Macho Man getting the win.
Yeah.
Yeah, an interesting ending. Like, Macho Man, like, punches him in the face, and he does a, he schoolboys him. Big handful of tights for the 1, 2, 3. And the Macho Man is the 2-time WWF champion now.
I'm not in favor of that. The face is cheating to win. They should have given him a clean win. But with all the distractions from Elizabeth and then grabbing the tights, it was all too heelish for me.
Yeah, see, I guess maybe just keeping it open for a rematch, I guess, is maybe the idea.
Well, yeah, which is definitely going to happen. And then, you know, after the match, they talk about it a lot, too, about how we use the tights. And I think it was just like, I think they wanted Flair to keep the belt, but I don't think that they were ready to have a heel leave WrestleMania as champion, because they hadn't done that up until this point, and I don't think they were ready to do that, because they don't do it until WrestleMania 2000.
Wow, yeah.
Because, I mean, Yoko wins it at WrestleMania 9, but he doesn't leave as champion. Hogan comes out and screws all that up.
Yeah.
Right.
And of course, we get the iconic image of Flair at the end. Promo covered in blood.
That was so good. Like, if you type in Ric Flair into any search bar, like, that's the image that comes up.
The one that comes up.
Yeah, and then after the match, too, they're like, they start beating Savage up. He kisses Liz on the lips. I'm like, how did they even talk Randy into allowing that to happen? Because that doesn't seem like something that you would be able to talk Randy Savage into.
They probably didn't tell him.
That's why he was shoot angry in the promo afterwards, because he was pissed about it.
Yeah. It's crazy that that's like just the go-to thing to do to women back in the day. Like, if you're mad at them, you just grab them and kiss them forcefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, you couldn't so I guess that's better that. Than hitting them. I don't know.
Yeah, you couldn't get away with that now. And so. Even in the promo after, the Flair's like, every time I see you, Macho Man, I'm going to do this. And every time I see Liz, I'm going to give her a kiss right on those soft lips. And I'm like, that's too much, man. You're doing too much. That's too far.
Those soft, moist lips. Like, oh, yeah. All right. All right, Richard.
Still not time to use the word moist, man. Don't do very that. Yeah, I don't know. I think that's I love that match. I've always loved the match, and maybe I'm just impartial to it. But, I mean, there was a lot of shenanigans at the end. Even a very young Shane McMahon came out there. We also got a Rene Goulet sighting. If you don't know who Rene Goulet is, he's the guy out there with the weird hair.
Yeah.
Shout out to our friends at the UTT podcast. Yeah, so we hear from a very angry Ric Flair and Mr. Perfect, and even a very angry Macho Man. You wouldn't think the Macho Man won, by the way he talked after the match.
Yeah.
Well, Miss Elizabeth has been defiled.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. So then they stole the whole show story of how Sid and Hulk Hogan, the main event match, came together. And if you just go back and watch the Life and Times of Psycho Sid, which is on YouTube, I mentioned it before, you can hear all of that because we went through all of it. We then hear a promo from the Motto, Rick Martel, where he says some things that you probably shouldn't say about Native Americans. He says he doesn't know if there'll even be a match tonight because Tatanka is currently scalping tickets.
Mm-hmm. I got it. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Native American. Yeah.
They do that.
Now, the Model's theme music, I could totally see Kyle running down a beach shirtless to this song.
Man, if I looked like the Model, I would. Or even if I looked like Tatanka, I would do that.
Yeah, you know what? They both got pretty nice bodies.
I will say, though, I was mad that we didn't get, Tatanka's big, juicy thighs on display in this one.
You're right. He had the tights on, which isn't a good usual look for Tatanka. He usually got the trunks.
Yeah, exactly. I was very confused, and I was very upset.
God damn it, pal. Tatanka's first WrestleMania and Rick Martel's last. My favorite part of this match had nothing to do with wrestling in the ring. It was Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby the Brain Heenan going back and forth, and Gorilla just making Bobby lose his mind over and over again. And that was literally the only thing from this match that I took any notes of, because the match was just what it was, I guess.
It wasn't anything special.
There was a good chop, though. That was the only thing I noted. Tatanka hits one chop in the corner on Martel. That was like the most sickening sound that I've ever heard from a chop. But other than that, it was just the thighs that I noted.
Almost as good as one of Gunther's chops, but not quite.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Tatanka gets the win with a high cross body block. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that I don't think anybody's going to win a match at WrestleMania 40 with a high cross body block. I just don't think so.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't win with an Indian Deathlock.
Oh!
No, come on!
Yeah, there we go, thank you. We then get a tag team title match between the Natural Disasters and Money, Inc.
Oh, so Money much handsomeness in one place.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, Handsome Earthquake, the most handsome wrestler in the history of wrestling. He's out here with a man who is handsome, but he's not quite as handsome as Earthquake. So I always call him Not So Handsome Typhoon because he's not quite as handsome as Earthquake. Jimmy Hart had apparently just turned recently on the Natural Disasters, helped the Money Inc. win the tag team championships from them. I don't know. Glenn, what do you think about this tag team match here?
Again, two good teams. Decent-ish match. Nothing special to write home about.
Yeah, I put that it was your standard early 90s WWF tag team match, as tag team match wrestling wasn't taken very seriously back in those days. And so from like looking at that perspective, I'd say it was a decent tag team match. What about you, Kyle?
It was fine. I didn't really care for the goofy count out finish to this.
Yeah.
It felt like this match was all Money Inc. just beating on the Typhoon on Shockmaster there, but I didn't get enough Shark in this match, so I think we needed more Shark, more Avalanche, and less Shockmaster.
Speaking of the Shockmaster, there was one point where Money Inc. is trying to like throw Typhoon over the top rope, and he looked about as fucking coordinated as this Shockmaster trying to do it because he just couldn't get over.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah.
I think the other problem with this match was that I think by this time people had decided that they needed a bathroom break, and the crowd was very flat.
Yeah, it's a good time to go get some of that Indiana corn we've been talking about.
Oh man, yeah. You think they got street corn? Is that a thing yet?
In 92, probably not.
I don't know if that was invented.
Street corn is good shit though.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
My favorite. It's probably my favorite corn.
Yeah. Do you like Glenn? How do you feel about creamed corn?
I like cream corn.
Of course you do. That sounds British.
You British son of a bitch. We knew you'd like it.
You guys just love beans and toast. Just creamy bullshit. Oh, yeah.
Can't be a bit of creamy bullshit.
Well. Sometimes creamy bullshit's the way to go, I guess.
That's what I say.
Yeah, so it looks like Earthquake's going to hit his finisher on IRS, but then Ted and Jimmy Hart pull him out of the ring, and then they just leave and get counted out and retain the titles. So, yeah, it was fine. We then listened to a promo from one Brutus the Barber Beefcake, because I guess because he's friends with Hulk Hogan. I don't know why he had to be on here. He didn't do anything but verbally jack off Hulk Hogan. That's all he did.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, this career in a nutshell, eh?
Yep, it was really.
You're not lying. Bobby Greenhaven said he'd rather have no friends than have Brutus the Barber Beefcake as his best friend.
You're not wrong.
Which was fun. Skinner was a fun gimmick, huh, Glenn?
Oh, got the Crocodile Hunter.
Alligator Man.
Alligator Man. That's
at least that's what a commentary said.
Yeah.
Oh, totally
different, Glenn.
Because of Crocodile Dundee, they could know him as a Crocodile Hunter. Alligator Man.
Yeah, Steve Irwin wasn't a thing yet. At least not only the wrestler, Steve Irwin.
But yeah.
Did you know that there was a wrestler, Steve Irwin? Did you know that?
You know, I think I've heard that, but I never put them together.
Yeah, because I didn't put it together. Yeah, Wild Bill and him were, I think they were brothers, right? Wild Bill Irwin. He was the goon.
Wild Bill Irwin is what I'm more familiar with, I think.
Yeah. I think his brother died of cancer early on. So that's probably why you don't know about his brother as much as him. And he didn't have a gimmick like the goon. So,
All I can say about this match is I saw it was Skinner. I saw it was the
high energy.
High energy version.
The Rocket.
Of Owen Hart. So just went to put the kettle on and I came back and it was over.
Yeah, it didn't last very long.
A minute and 9 seconds of nothingness.
Sounds like, never mind.
We're with you.
Forget it. Yeah, it was a throwaway match, and I was confused about the placement of this match. It's like, why you should have just had the tag team match and then had the main event. Like, this is just a weird thrown in match.
Yeah.
If you're gonna have it, you should have thrown it in. Like, it should have been after the Michaels Tito Santana match. I feel like.
Yeah.
It's like they had three cool down matches in a row after Flair and Macho Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was strange. I thought it could have used another match because they did Brett versus Piper, and then they did the tag team match, and they went right to the Flair Savage match. Now, if you would have put one of those matches in between that two instead of all three of these matches before the main event, I think it would have been better. Also, I don't care any amount. There is no amount of money in the world that I'm going to allow another man to spit chewing tobacco in my face. I'm not doing it. That is disgusting. There's no, I will kill a man if he spits chewing tobacco on my face. One of us has to go at that point. Either you're killing me or I'm killing you if you spit chewing tobacco on my face. One of us got to go.
Yeah, that's gross. Disgusting. Yeah. I'd rather a man shit on my chest than spit chewing tobacco.
I thought, thanks.
You that's just me, price for that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. OnlyFans.com /
Yeah, I mean, Skinner just beat him up for a minute, and then he tried to throw him over the top rope, and then Owen skinned the cat, got back in. He skinned the cat?
Skinner didn't skin the cat?
I have seen Skinner do that fucking thing before, though, which is, I mean, you wouldn't expect it from a gator, man, but he did it. Anyway, and then Owen rolls him up for the win. That's it. Yeah. I don't even know why we need to have that match or why Skinner ever...
I don't know. Skinner is... What was it? Leo Kruger in NXT? That's what he reminded me of.
Oh, wow. Leo Kruger before he was Adam Rose. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was more significant than Skinner was, but yeah, no. Always good to see Owen Hart, I guess. I'll never be mad at that.
Except for the outfit that he's wearing.
I'll tell you what, his pants look very comfortable.
You're not lying. They did look very comfy, but also very huge. We then hear from Sid. He's with Harvey Whippleman. And I love a good Sid promo, so we're going to listen to it.
Yeah,
expect there's going to be a barn burner.
No! Shut up, you fat, bow-headed little oaf! Now you, Hogan, a barn burner it won't be!
It is going to be your last match, and I will see to that. I have already made that promise to you, Hogan.
Right now, I have to tell you, at WrestleMania... I just won't know until I come out of the ring if it was my last match.
I don't care. I don't give a damn about the memories of Hulk Hogan. The only thing they'll remember is that Sid Justice is the man that ended Hulkamania. Now you, Hogan, I curse you. I curse you and every Hulkamaniac. Because I rule the world.
Mm-hmm. He sure does.
Mm-hmm. He's allowed to curse people because he rules the world. I'm not going to argue with him.
I feel like every Sid promo, I feel like I'm getting sucked into the screen when I look at him. He just has like that look in his eye.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I get it.
That's why we started. I don't give a shit. Because of that.
We do just for the promos, not even for the matches.
Yeah, exactly.
True. Main event, Hulk Hogan battling Sid Justice. Harvey Whippleman's out here to introduce Dr. Harvey Whippleman, probably a proctologist.
Hey.
Doctor. Monsoon refers to him as Psycho Sid, and I think that might be the first time I heard it as he's coming out to the ring here. And like, I know they're like saying maybe Hulk Hogan's popularity is waning, but not from what I saw, because the people were going absolutely apeshit when he came out. So still pretty over in 1992.
Yep, and Sid attacks him. So that's definitely woken everybody up after being put into a coma by the last three matches.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I think this was just your standard Hulk Hogan match. What about you, Glenn?
It annoyed me that Hogan, I know it was going to happen, but it annoyed me that Hogan kicks out of the powerbomb. Nobody kicks out the powerbomb.
Yeah.
But apart from that, yeah.
Love a good test of strength, you know? Nothing wrong with that.
Oh, well, we talked about that.
I messaged Glenn as I was watching this and said, why do tests of strength always look so sexual?
Yeah.
Hogan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if you have the strength to like look to the crowd and like pantomime, like you could probably just get up off your knees and get that big Sid Justice out of your mouth. But also, by the way,
you ever seen Warrior versus Hogan WrestleMania 6?
Yeah, that was worse.
Yeah,
it was his favorite. I do. This might be one of my favorite Pearl Harbor jobs though of all time. Because Sid does it. He attacks him during Hogan's entrance. And then he does a drop down. Like, of all the things, you're like attacking him before the bell. And he's like, all right, drop down. I'm going to give you a hip toss. Oh, no. And then the music keeps playing as the beat down.
Yeah.
So I'm like, are we getting a New Jack match with just like a real American playing during the whole thing? Which I would be fine with.
It probably would have added something to it if they just kept the music going, I think.
It wouldn't have made it worse, I'll say that. So
that's 100% a fact. I mean, it was fine, but like I said, it was your standard Hulk Hogan match. Kyle, you got any notes you want to throw at us on this one?
Yeah, I mean, outside of the Pearl Harbor job, I mean, it was, like you guys said, pretty standard. I do love Sid's one-arm choke slam. Like, it looks, it's not like a clean-looking move, but it looks like yeah. he has to be strong to do it. Like, it's pretty impressive looking.
Yeah, it hurt. It looks like it hurts.
Yeah.
You've seen him hurt jobbers with that.
Plenty of them.
I mean, the Papa Shango element of this is probably my favorite part of it, but I'm sure you'll get into it.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, so, I mean, Sid takes control early, opening bell. Hogan fights back to some right. It's your Hulk Hogan match. I mean, the heel takes control for a while. He does all of his big moves on Hogan, hits his finisher, which is the last thing you want to do. If you're wrestling Hulk Hogan in the 90s and WF, don't hit your finisher because that's where it's all going south for you. It is over once you've hit your finisher. He kicks out at a hard two, you know, blocks the fists, runs his head to the turnbuckles, hits the big boot, hits the leg drop. He goes to pin Sid. And Sid kicks out at a hard two, and you're like, huh?
I was confused.
Yeah.
And Harvey Whippleman eventually gets up on the apron and gets into the ring, and then they ring the bell, signifying his qualification. And then Papa Shango comes wandering out from the back as if someone just threw him out here and he doesn't know why he's here. He's like, huh?
He took longer to get to that ring to help out than the Undertaker did in his match.
Yeah. It was, yeah. I don't know. Guy, what'd you think about Papa Shango's entrance?
So I guess what the idea was, he was going to interrupt the pin instead of Hogan kicking out, I assume, or Sid kicking out.
Yeah.
It was interesting. I mean, like you said, it took him, like, I feel like Godfather came out to the ring faster when he was strutting with his hose than Papa Shango did here. But
yeah.
It's like, I'm already late. Might as well, I don't know.
Taking the scenery.
Yeah, it was like when you wake up and you're already 20 minutes late for work and you're like, fuck it, if I'm 20 minutes late, I'd be an hour. So you
it was very confusing and it was nothing really made sense. It was silly.
Yeah, and of course it was then helped by the mayor's favorite man coming out.
The ultimate warrior makes his return. to save Hulk Hogan from the beatdown. This was all a very, very anticlimactic because Papa Shango didn't get out there on time. And like when you think about it, you hear about it, you're like, oh, so he was late by a couple of seconds. No, he was late by 5 fucking minutes. It was. But Undertaker got to the ring quicker at WrestleMania 25 when the fucking ramp was 6 miles long than it took a fucking.
Yeah.
It was like somebody cast voodoo on Papa Shango and he forgot what he was supposed to do.
Maybe he like the wires got crossed in his voodooing and he voodooed himself, self voodoo.
Maybe he started having shit come out of his pores like he does later on to the Ultimate Warrior in 1992. Maybe that's what happened. Yeah, maybe he had diarrhea.
That's probably. I mean, they're both backstage, Warrior and Shango's. That, I mean, it makes sense from a timeline perspective.
It really does. So they basically run the heel guys off. Well, Sid gets a chair and he hits Warrior in the back with it, but then Hogan takes the chair from him and Sid bails out of the ring. So Hogan wins by DQ in what would be his last official WrestleMania main event. He had WrestleMania the previous 8. He would main event WrestleMania 9 too, but not officially. And the show goes off the air with the two of them celebrating in the ring. And me watching Hulk Hogan trying to get the Ultimate Warrior to do his stick with him was like anyone trying to teach me how to do a new dance. That's what it looked like,
man. There is just a lot of Ico Pro running through the veins of the people in the ring at that point, so
it was
not a lot of communication happening.
Although this was probably the slimmest Warriors ever looked.
It was a little bit off
because this was the point where the rumors started going around that they'd replaced the real Rock Warrior with Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah, did you know that those rumors, Kyle? The rumors when he came back were that the original Warrior had died. Mm-hmm. And there were rumors that it was Kerry Von Erich, and then it was also rumored that it was maybe a different guy because the old Ultimate Warrior had died and they replaced him with this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the hair looked very Von Erich. I'll say that. So I can understand the rumors, but otherwise, yeah, I mean the face, it's hard to tell by the face because he has stupid face paint on, but yeah. Yeah, the hair was deaf. The bangs were not good from the Warrior. I'll say that. If I have to give a star rating to his bangs, I'm going to give him a 1.5.
That's being generous.
That's generous, yeah.
I'd give it a 0.03. If I was going to give the Ultimate Warrior's career a star rating, it would be 0.00000.
Yeah. him and Macho had a pretty good match, though, at SummerSlam, from what I remember.
They did, and then at WrestleMania 7, they have a great match, too. Their match at WrestleMania 7.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a career match, I think it is. but, yeah, that's it. That is all we have for WrestleMania 8. Any final notes that you got from this, Kyle, before we get out of here?
No, I mean, it was, like I said, it was an easy watch. It's like, you got, if you're watching this, you got to, like, put yourself in the 90s, like, the silliness of the gimmicks and the style of wrestling. But there's two like all-time WrestleMania matches on this card, so if nothing else, it's worth it to watch the IC title match and the WWF title match. But it was cool to see it, like some characters that I don't get to see a lot, like I don't know, the Mountie, or that's about it, I guess, or like prime-ish Jake Roberts was a treat to see, early, yeah. Undertaker. So it's a fun time capsule to go back and watch, and yeah, but yeah, those two matches stood out to me and are definitely worth anybody going back and watching.
Definitely. What about you, Glenn? Any final thoughts on WrestleMania 8?
Started strong and went downhill, unfortunately. And why they put those two really long promos in there with the Legion of Doom and then Lex Luger, where they could have had the Bulldog and Berserker out there actually running the match.
We got to get this big guy to take his shirt off and drink milk, Glenn. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I know.
What was up with Heenan, like, begging Lex to take his shirt off, by the way? That was another, I forgot to mention. It was like, God, show us what you got under there, Lex.
Yeah.
Bobby Heenan loves shirtless men, and I get it.
Sure. I mean, we watch wrestling, so I guess we all do.
He probably had an invested interest in the... Bodybuilding Federation.
I'm betting somebody else put him up to it. I bet somebody else, like, look, pal, what I need you to do is to get him to take his shirt off. I really want to see his shirt. I want to shit on. I mean, I want to see his chest.
By the way, the Vince introduction to this show was psychotic. Just the voiceover. WrestleMania!
It's the greatest stage. It's WrestleMania! Yeah, it's... Oh, His over-the-top shit, it always makes me laugh because that's the era of wrestling I grew up with. Yeah. But now it just makes me cringe because you just think about how gross he is.
Yeah.
But overall, it was worth it. Again, as you say, for the Ric Flair, the What's It match.
Yes, the What's It match. I love that one.
My favorite.
For Randy Savage match. Undertaker and Jake Roberts, another good match.
Yeah.
And Roddy Piper against Bret Hart, which was a banger.
Yeah. I mean, I think that show was really top heavy. I mean, if you think about it, the four best matches, I mean, the El Matador, Tito Santana, and Shawn Michaels was good. The Jake Roberts, Undertaker was good. Mm-hmm. And then the two championship matches were good. And then it kind of fell off a cliff after that a little bit. Yep. So, yeah, that is it for our WrestleMania. That's going to do it for our time with Kyle. And before we get you out of here, Kyle, where can people find you? Where can they listen to you? Let us know.
Ooh, for the pleasure of being on once again. Appreciate you having me. If you like retro wrestling, which if you're listening or watching this and you don't, I don't know what you're doing. But maybe just like their pleasantries. I don't know. But check out the Apron Bump podcast where I cover a bunch of retro wrestling. Both from like the Monday Night Wars, TNA, Ring of Honor. I'm all over the board there. So go check it out. I've had Brent on a few times. We've covered ECW, WWF, all sorts of stuff.
Everything but WCW, I think you've had me on for.
Well, we'll figure that out. We'll make you hit for the cycle over there. So So yeah, check it out. Apron Bump, at Apron Bump on all the social medias and YouTube, wherever you listen, and OnlyFans and Chatterbait and all that stuff.
Wait a minute, you got an OnlyFans?
Yeah, it's a hefty price, but everybody's got a price.
Goddamn right.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. Yeah. Anyway, Glenn, what about you? Who are we plugging before we get out of here today?
I don't think we'll plug anybody on this one, as it's a bonus show. We'll save that for the main show.
We do all the plugs on every show. I will, however, plug Sportswire Radio. Give our buddy Thomas Bryce a follow on all the social medias. It's Thomas, if you don't know how to spell Thomas, and I don't know what to do for you. Bryce, B-R-I-C-E, or Thomas B. Rice is what I'm going to start calling him. That's his rap name. Be on the lookout for this mixtape. It'll be dropping next week. No, it won't. And check out the website. It's Sportswire Radio with a Z.org. Hit that listen live button. You can listen to all the great shows that are on there. And of course, give the other member of our podcast team, the mayor of Canton, a follow on the X Twitter gimmick if you're on there. He does a meal with the mayor every Wednesday where he eats something so you don't have to. Or maybe you'll learn something new that you haven't heard of yet that you want to go out and purchase and eat. Or he'll eat cheesecake, which will make you mad. And that's it. I don't have anything else to plug. Besides, of course, listen to all the other shows we do. We got a top 10 WrestleMania list show out right now that you could check out. And a whole bunch of other plethora. We got Warring Attitude 1997 review show. And, of course, I Don't Know Shit, The Life and Times of Psycho Sid. Where Sid goes around to Memphis and every wrestling territory and beats up your favorite wrestler. And we enjoy watching him do that. That is it. That is all I have to say and to do. Everybody enjoy WrestleMania. Have a good time. Don't take wrestling too seriously. That's what I like to do. Yeah. And now the only thing left to do is for Glenn to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
There we go. That was...
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.